Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordechai Joseph. We're today in lesson 229, and we're now in chapter 18 and verse 16, where the father-in-law of Moses is checking with him and trying to find out why is it that Moses is doing everything on his own without delegating authority, without helping, that is, asking others to help him so he can really effectively judge the people of Israel. And obviously, Moses is the father-in-law. That is, Moses is the son-in-law of Jethro, and therefore Jethro, being the father-in-law, has that authority and has that right to question his son-in-law. Probably others may have seen the same, may have had the questions, but either did not dare say anything to Moses, or whichever it may be. Maybe Aaron saw it and couldn't say anything about it. Not wanting to appear as if they're challenging his authority or questioning what he does. But the father-in-law is in a unique position to do so, and that's exactly what he does here. And so Moses replies to him, and here there is no challenge to authority, because the father-in-law, according to the custom and culture, is in authority in that sense. And so Moses replies to his father-in-law that the reason why he does it, he says, because the people, verse 15, come unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws. And so the people of Israel now, in a state of mind where they have the usual natural difficulties that people have among themselves, but they are at a state of mind here where they want to know what God says about this matter or that matter, which is a good beginning for them. You know, they could have settled those matters all by themselves without asking of God's opinion. But they are coming to God, just like people today go to the courts, to determine a matter. And obviously, among themselves, they cannot. And reality is, and that's the way God wanted it, and that's the way God commands us to function, that when the law of God is written in our hearts, we don't need to go to a judge. We don't need to go to a court of the land. We should be able to settle it among ourselves by the mere fact that the Spirit of God is in us and the law of God written in our hearts. We should submit to that God who is in our heart through His law, through His word. And fortunately, even today, there are even brethren calling themselves churches of God who do not shy away from going to the courts of the land to settle a matter. Well, that's to our own shame. The way God meant for it ultimately is that we do not need to go to the judges if the law is written in our heart. If it's not, obviously we have a problem. And so it is here with the children of Israel. They're all carnal-minded, and so they have to resort to that, which ideally, ultimately, this is not what God had in mind. A man shall be governed by God himself directly when the law of God is written in his heart. And so this is what Moses is saying to his father-in-law. That's the reason why I'm doing it. He said, I'm judging between a man and his neighbor and make them know the statutes of God and his laws. In Hebrew, the word for laws is torotav. Torah is singular for the Torah, the law, the body of teachings. Torotav, that's in the plural, because as you would see later on in many places, there are several kind of Torah. In other words, there is a Torah for the tabernacle, and there is a Torah between a husband and wife, and there is a Torah of sacrifices, you know, body of instruction for every area of life. And then, ultimately speaking, the Torah itself contains all this body of teachings. And so he's using here the word Torah for that reason, to make a difference between certain areas of life and others. Human relationship, you know, fall into one category, and the God-man relationship into another category. Whichever is the case, this is what they came to him for. And obviously, in this case, it was basically personal grievances that they may have had between one another, and not necessarily, obviously, at this point, laws that pertain to the serving of God in the tabernacle. That came later. And so we see here, in verse 17, Moses' father-in-law says unto him, the thing that you do is not good. Yes, some people have vanity in their heart and mind, and they would immediately reply, who do you think you are? Come and tell me. You know, me, the servant of God, who speaks to God face to face, tell me that what I'm doing is not good. And that's unfortunately, is generally, in most cases, unfortunately, the problem with most of the leaders of this earth, in whatever category, and especially in religion, when they invoke God above all things, which others do not, their vanity is even much greater, and their arrogance and haughtiness even much greater. Here I am, the man of God, and it's only God and me, and God speaks only through me, and so forth. And that was generally, the line that the popes that gave to themselves, which God never gave them, obviously, and the supremacy over all mankind. And some of them, were so haughty and arrogant that they gave themselves, the supremacy even over the angels of God. Not so with a man who is humble and meek. It doesn't make any difference in what position you are. It doesn't make any difference whether you see God face to face. Moses makes it very plain, and all the servants of God. God can speak through an ass, which he did. And he can speak through this and through that. You see, he even speaks through false prophets and delivers truth to Israel, like with the case of Balaam. 2 or 3 chapters. God speaking through a false prophet, a greedy prophet, covetous prophet, and it's just right here in the Bible. That doesn't make any difference who comes and brings anything to our attention. It's what is being said. If we fear God, we'll submit to it. And if we do not fear God, if we exalt and elevate ourselves in our own eyes, obviously, God is not anymore our God. We think he is, but he's not. We become God, and therefore we tell people, whom do you think you are? But even God himself, that should have given us even an example of where in that state of mind of supreme haughtiness and arrogance, God himself accepts challenges from his own creation, from children that he created with his own hands, dust of the earth, flesh and blood. When he is infinite and we are finite, extremely finite in comparison to him, and he accepts rebukes even from us, that is, in the right way, with the right attitude, as Abraham did. He challenged God about his justice and judgment over the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. Moses did several times, and others have done, and they changed the mind of God. You see? But people who are busy with their own selves, totally engrossed with their own self, they don't even allow that. Well, here is the ultimate example. Our very God allows us to do that. And so it is, Moses in law, a meek man, a very meek man, a person who really fears God, and that's how you find out, when you talk to somebody who's in authority, if he really a man who fears God or a woman that fears God, they would never take what you say to them, and obviously it should be done with the right attitude, and not a complaining attitude or a bickering attitude, which unfortunately many people do. In the right attitude, they shouldn't take it as a challenge, but say, okay, let's consider the matter, see what it is. After all, God is our Father, all of us, the high and the mighty and the little and lowly, whatever it may be, so it doesn't make any difference. And we children of God should function like that. A little brother, a big brother, what difference does it make? They come to us and tell us something, as little father and the little children, they complain to their dad about this and that and the other thing. And the dad doesn't say, whom do you think you are? A little whatever. You see, they listen and they change their mind. They think about, what is being said. So here we have a wonderful example of Moses that unfortunately many of the high and the mighty do not follow and do not listen to, because really they do not fear God as the thing they do. Exalted themselves in their own eyes, and now they cannot see God anymore or his word, and it's not in their heart. It's just a facade for them. And so Moses' father-in-law said unto him, the thing that you do is not good. And Moses does not explode. He just listens. He says to him, you shall surely wear out both you and the people that is with you, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to perform it yourself alone. You see? So he's in essence he's telling him about deficiencies that he has. A lot of people don't like to listen to that or hear that. Well, what do you mean I cannot do it? Well, who do you think you are to tell me that? How do you dare, putting me down? Things like that. Well, that's not the issue. Here, this was a reality. This is what's going to happen if he's going to, in essence, do it in this manner. In other words, this was not wise. And Moses was not using wisdom here. And his father-in-law, basically, this is what he tells him. What you're doing is not right. That's not wise. That's not effective. That's not good. You've got to change, you know, do something else that is better. And I'll give you the, you know, the better advice. And Moses takes it. And so he says, listen to my voice, hearken to my voice, and I will give you counsel. And see, Moses doesn't say, no, now wait a minute. Now, with all due respect, you're my father-in-law, but, you know, you're forgetting a few things. I'm the servant of God, you're not. Well, it doesn't function like that. Not when you are a genuine person, genuine man of God, a person who really fears God, you're listening. You're quick to listen. That's the nature of love. Entreated, as Paul would say in the chapter of love to the Corinthians. Love is easily entreated. Haughtiness and arrogance are not. Self-exaltation are not. Pride. You see, and God resists this kind of people. And most of the leaders that we have known in our lives, they don't realize it, but God has been resisting them because they are proud and haughty and arrogant. But he's listening to those among them who are humble and meek and are willing to listen. Even to a word of rebuke by somebody who may not be of great stature. What difference does it make? It's what you say. Is it right? That's all that counts. And so he says, hearken unto my voice, and I will give you counsel, and God be with you. See, be you for the people before God, and just sort of as God, in other words. And, in other words, you're the mediator between them and God. So when they bring things to you, ultimately, you know, we have to remember they are bringing it to God, really, not to you as a person. They are not interested in your opinion. They are interested in the Word of God, the law of God. So why should anybody ever get arrogant about it, or haughty, and so forth? You see, nobody's asking for our opinion. You see, they're asking for the law of God. That's the reason why they come to the men of God, to the servants of God, to the teachers of God. And so he says, God will be with you. And obviously he's going to be with you only if you humble yourself before him, or else he will have no wisdom and he'll just give your own opinion. And so he said, be you for the people before God, you know, be an intercessor, and bring you the causes unto God. You see, you are not the source of wisdom and knowledge and truth and understanding, and a lot of people think that way, unfortunately, and somebody comes and asks somebody like that a question and immediately thinks that that person is addressing him, and he's not. He wants to know what the Word of God is, not the, you know, the opinion of that person. And so they become haughty and arrogant, when he's being challenged on this point or that point. And so he said, no, you bring those causes unto God. See, it's God is going to make the decision, not you. And so he says, you bring the causes unto God, and you shall teach them the statutes and the laws. In other words, you shall teach them the statutes and the Torah. And you shall show them the way. You see, as we mentioned that earlier several times, especially in the series, I believe, of the identity of the church, who and what is the church. The religion of God is called the Way. It's not called Judaism. It's not called Christianity. It's not called by any other name that people give it. You see, where they give their own opinion, that's in essence what it is. You know, the words of the rabbis, in essence, perverted and warped Judaism. Because Judaism used to be the religion of Judah that God gave Judah. Because Judah, you know, remained faithful while Israel went astray and retained only a measure of the law of God, of the teachings of God. And so Judaism, once upon a time, meant the religion that God gave to Judah, because God said, Judah is my lawgiver. See, a lot of people have forgotten that. Well, the rabbis came and made the Jewish religion that God gave to Judah, that's what it means, Jewish religion, as Christ himself would say, doesn't it say in your law, you know, you are Jews, that's your law, your Jewish law. Well, you know, what does that mean? Well, God gave it to you, just like he gave the law to Moses. It's not Mosaic law. It's God's law that he commanded to him. And, you know, others get mixed up about it. But when people take it upon themselves, you know, to begin to alter the Word of God and give their own opinions, well, Judaism became rabbinic Judaism, no more biblical Judaism. And so did so-called Christianity. As long as that was the teachings of Jesus Christ, the doctrine of Christ, as long as the apostles or the servants that were faithful to Christ taught the word of Christ, which was the teachings of Christ, basically was the Torah of Christ. That was no different than that it was, you know, from the days of Moses or the days of Adam. Only with greater explanations and spiritual content that was not understood before by most. But, you know, was understood by prophets, servants of God. So it's still the same Torah. And as long as they taught it, then, you know, being a Christian means following Christ, following the doctrine of Christ. And Christ was right here speaking to Moses. You see? So people do not follow that. They do not follow Christ. And so they created Christianity. And Christianity is not the religion of God. You see? And Judaism is not the religion of God because it is rabbinic Judaism. Now it includes, yes, portions of the law, teachings, prophets, things like that, and so does, you know, so-called Christianity. But as long as we take it and we pervert it and warp it, we become, as God calls it, his own truth, mixed with error, he calls it vomit or dung, plain words. You see? That's what he says in Malachi to the priests. We're supposed to teach the law of God. He said, because of, you know, all tables are full of tzoah. You know, tzoah means dung. That's which comes out of man and beast. And some people would say, well, how can he call the truth tzoah? Well, when you mix it up with error, that's what it becomes. So a lot of people, they feel very good. They're smug about it. You know, we've got the truth. And they don't realize that what they've got on their table and in their mouth and what they feed others and what they're being fed in schools, seminaries, whatever it may be, is just, from God's point of view, a lot of dung. You see, once upon a time, that dung used to be food. Good food, pure food, and then got corroded, corrupted, and so forth, and polluted and defiled, you know, with, naturally, that's the way God made it, with the acids that, you know, as it went into the stomach and things like that. But, you know, that the concept is there, that this is what God is trying to drive here. That when you teach the Torah of God, it should remain always pure, and when it's not pure, when you mix with it other things, it's no longer the Torah of God. And so Judaism cannot claim to be the religion of God. Biblical Judaism, yes, but not rabbinic. And Christianity is not a religion of God. And for people, you know, to be proud of being called, you know, Christians or, you know, members of Christianity, you know, they have to sit down and think about what are they talking about. The purity of the religion, which has always been the same, and it's not out of, you know, Judaism, they think, you know, two great religions came. You know, the terminology is a nauseating terminology to God. What do you mean two great religion? How can you have Christianity coming out of Judaism and Islam later on? You see? God has only one way. And that's what he calls it. It's a way of life. And it does not deviate. And he says, I change not. And so when people begin to change that, that's just where we end up with. That's the reason why we're studying the law. So we can know exactly what came out of the very mouth of God. And this was the criteria for following God, that Christ made it very plain. You know, the very God that came to Mount Sinai and spoke directly to Moses, and everything that he told Moses, that's what Moses recorded. Nowhere would you find, you know, Moses' opinion there. You see, only the Word of God. And so this God, when he came down in the flesh, Jesus Christ, he said to us, to every single one of us, man shall live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of who? Your pastor? Your minister? Your bishop? Your cardinal? Your pope? Whatever it may be? No. You know, your rabbi? Of course not. God said, cursed be the man that puts his trust in men. A lot of people are being cursed because of that. God says, no, you live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God himself. And so did Jesus Christ give us an example that he himself, he did not come to invent a new religion called Christianity. You see? Some people, you know, may be shocked. Christ himself, he was not a Christian. See? He was not a follower of himself. That's what it means for him to be a Christian, a follower of himself. He was not a follower of himself. He was a follower of God. He obeyed the laws of God. He obeyed the commandments of God. He kept it until the end. You see, he never did it, invented his own, and said, well, forget about that law, you know, that old harsh monster the Father gave, you know, which to begin with he didn't. And directly, you see, Jesus Christ is the one that brought it down on Mount Sinai from the Father, and that was his own religion too. That's a way of life. You know, some people, you know, when they study the law, they should think about these matters. Because a lot of us have a religion, and we don't realize it. You know, we call ourselves Christians or Christianity, whatever it may be. And we do things that are good according to the law, and so does a Buddhist and a Shintoist and a pagan and whatever it may be. And what we do, we call it Christian. What do we call those things, you know, that are done exactly with the same attitude and manner by the Buddhist or the Shintoist or the Islamic person or the Jewish person, you know, or rabbi, whatever it may be? That's not Christianity. That's the way of God. And anybody who walks according to that way is walking according to the way of God. But, you know, people like to appropriate the teachings of God to themselves. So the Jews appropriate to themselves, and the Christians appropriate it to themselves, and Islam claim, you know, we are the true faith, the last revelation, also shall submit to us, and so forth. You know, all that from doing is vomit, dung. That's all it means. God is not interested in that. He said, you worship me in truth and in spirit. So we should never be interested in the words of men, no matter who that man is. What we should be interested in, as God says in the book of Malachi, that you go to the priest for what? To seek the law, the Torah of God. Not his own opinion or his own words. And when men learn to do that, they're not going to be misled by people. You see? And so anybody who says whatever, you run to the book. That's your player, you know, safety net, so to speak. And you check it out, like the Bereans. Is it really so? Is it really what it says here? And see, so God can speak directly to you as you read his own word, and then your truth and what is written in your heart came directly out of the mouth of God, and so you lived by every word that came out of the mouth of God and not of men. So people should never look up to men. I don't care who that man is. And so this is what he says here. You shall teach them the statutes and the laws, that is in the Torah, of God, you see, not yours. And they shall show them the way, you know, the way of God, not the way of men, not the way, you know, not Mosaic way, the way of God, wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do, you see. And when we walk by the way of God, it's all the same. Now that's why God made it very plain. Jesus Christ made it plain, speaking to Israel, and he made it a law. One law, one Torah, one way shall be to you and to the strangers. So you don't have such a thing or such reality as people call it a reality, which is not. It's a lie that Christianity came out of Judaism. And Christianity is a different religion. Or that Islam came out of Judaism. It did not. All truth proceeds from God. You see? It doesn't come from another religion. That already tells you there that people are confused. And so that's what he's saying here. You teach them the way of God. Now, whether they are Israelites, strangers, pagans, whatever it may be, it's going to be the way of God and not any man's ways. Now, obviously, you know, there is a human terminology, you know, because the Jews, later on, were the only ones to keep the law of God, so people call it Jewish laws or Judaism, or, you know. But if you understand that what it means is the way of God and the teachings of Moses, which God gave him, and it's the purity that comes from God and it is the word of God, you know, then you bypass all this human terminology that we give to it, because God didn't give the you know, that terminology to it, and we should not either, you know, but, you know, we're human beings, so we tend to do it, you know, in terms of explaining certain matters and making a difference between, you know, the Jewish Sabbath and the Christian Sabbath and the Islamic Sabbath, and each one of them is on a different way, a day, you know, and that's a problem for mankind, confusion. You know, you talk about God's Sabbath, and it's always the same day. Whether the Jews keep it or not, it's neither here nor there. Still God's Sabbath. And so he says in verse 21, moreover, you shall provide out of the people able men, such as fear God. That's the first thing. It should be people of ability, because a lot of people may fear God, but they do not have the ability to transmit information to others. It's not enough just to fear God. You have to be able also to try and transmit information to others and teach them and make them understand it. And so there should be able men, such as fear God, men of truth. You see? So a lot of people, you know, are being chosen to positions of leadership because they are able. But do they fear God? You see? Are they men of truth? Do they hate unjust gain?
You see, all these are extremely important because this is God's way. And here is a man, a priest of Midian, who served God, a son of Abraham, and obviously had also with it other teachings that may not have been of God, but at least this he understood. And this man, you might say, here is being inspired by God to speak to Moses. And Moses is listening because he sees the words of wisdom, and wisdom comes only from God, regardless who is the one speaking it. A believer or an unbeliever. Truth is truth. Wisdom is wisdom. Wherever it comes from, it's from God. And so this is what God, in essence, tells us. When we are choosing leaders among ourselves, it should be people of ability. You see, assumingly speaking, the first thing you're looking for is he capable of doing the job or not. A person who fears God, then you go deeper. Does he fear God? Is he a man of truth? Does he hate unjust gain? You see? And that's what he's saying here. Hating unjust gain, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And that's in essence, the ability that you check, for. Are they capable of handling many or just very few? Or only one person, maybe, they're not even capable of handling themselves. They can just give wise advice to others, but they cannot even manage themselves. So I say, okay, give good advice to others, but, as for yourself, that's something you need to work on. And so listen to somebody else who's able to handle you. Verse 22, and it says, let them judge the people at all seasons, the men of all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto you, but every small matter they shall judge to themselves. So with all this ability and everything that they're able to do and the fear of God and men of truth, they still, shall be judging the small matter, but the greatest one shall come to you. Why? Because the greatest matters, oftentimes even Moses himself may not know how to handle it, and he goes directly to God and they cannot in that sense. Now, obviously here we are talking about a unique situation where there is Moses and there is God and he speaks to him face to face. And unfortunately we don't have that today. We wish we did. There are a lot of points that we cannot solve among ourselves because we don't have a Moses or a prophet of God where he can take it directly to God and God speaks to him. Some people claim that they were that kind of a person where God speaks to them and then they spoke their own opinions and their own ideas and people followed it, and that was vomit and a dung in the sight of God. That's not God's religion. That's man's religion mixed with the truth. You see, and unless God really speaks to us in person, we should not be so haughty and arrogant to even say that to others and deceive them and lead them astray. And so that's what he says here. So the small matter that you'll judge and the big matters you take care of, because obviously you're going to take it to God. And he said, so shall they make it easier for you and bear the burden with you. You see? All together. And God works through all of us. And later on, that's exactly what God, what Jesus Christ inspired his disciples, his apostles, his men that he dealt with to convey this very information. It's not something new. You see? He says that, God gave gifts to everyone, and everyone should be participator in the government of God, in the rule, in the teachings, in the service, in whatever, a people do together. All should be able, if not able, God is not going to give them abilities, to do this and that. So God has to give them the ability to begin with. And there should be people who fear God, men of truth, who hate unjust gain. You see, then they can be in a position to be over others and rulers of thousands and so forth. Otherwise, if they're not competent, they're going to cause an awful lot of damage. And that's unfortunately the story of men. An awful lot of damage that has been caused repeatedly by men in authority in any given human endeavor, be it government, be it religion, be it the business community, anything that you may think of. And the way of God made it very plain. If we follow his way of life, you see, his religion, things are going to settle in the right way for the best and the benefit of all. And so this is what he says. And if you shall do, verse 23, this thing, and God command you. So it's not, even Jethro acknowledges the fact, I'm not speaking my own opinion here, He says, if you do these things and God really commands you to do so, so if it is in accordance with God, you see, Jethro is deferring to God, not to himself. So here is a humble man. That's why he can give good advice. A lot of people give good advice, but they're not really humble people, as they should be. They themselves, you know, they talk the talk, but they do not walk the walk, so to speak, as some would say. But Jethro did. He was a servant of God, a faithful servant of God. How much he did, you know, we don't know. All we do know is that what comes out of his mouth is in accordance with the words of God, at least to the recorded things that he said. It's not a coincidence that God led Moses to that very man and not to somebody else. There are a lot of Midianites around, but he led him to this family, to this clan. And so he says, if you shall do this thing and God command you so, then you shall be able to endure, and all these people also shall go to their place. And that's the end result of it. When we walk in the way of God, and all of us, great and small, humble to the ways of God, whatever we're going to do among ourselves shall bear the results of peace. And so Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law. Why? Because he recognized that's wisdom of God. And did all that he had said. And obviously Moses checked it with God, because as Jethro made it very plain, when God commands you so. So that meant you have to go to God and check that with him and see if that's really the best idea. And Jethro is not giving, you know, the credit to himself, you know, that I give you, you know, wonderful advice. He said, you check it with God. And if God approves of it, then you know that it's a good one. And so, you know, you see all these elements here. And so Moses obviously listened to the voice of his father-in-law. In other words, God used the voice of his father-in-law to deliver this message. And that's all there is to it. And he did all that he had said, obviously under divine inspiration. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. Now later on, Moses will bring this issue again in Deuteronomy as it speaks to the second generation. And there he said it in a different way, because there were other elements involved here that are not mentioned at this point. At that point he said, he did not mention his father-in-law later on, but he said that the children of Israel, will come to it when we get to Deuteronomy, were basically a little bit too much for him, and so he brought this information that Jethro gave him, though he does not mention his name, everybody knows that's exactly what happened, to their attention, and told them, look, you know, I cannot do the whole work. In other words, when Moses was given this advice by Jethro, he went to the people and he told them basically what Jethro told him, which is, you know, basically in accordance with the way of God. And told him, look, you know, I cannot do it all by myself, so please don't come to me anymore with everything that you have. And you got to look around, you know the people around you, you really know who they are. You're the ones capable of choosing those leaders. I don't know them from Adam, you know, in many cases, you know, how does he know everybody? But you say, you know them, you experience them, you know what kind of people they are. You know whether they really fear God. You know them by experience, you see. Now that's why later on in the New Testament you hear that same description of how to choose elders or deacons. Well, the apostle said, okay, now we cannot do everything, so you go among yourselves. You know who those people are, and you know whom you want to be over you. Obviously, people who do not take advantage of you, but people that fear God. And you bring those people to us, and we're going to ordain them. So, you know, nothing has changed. You don't see in the New Testament any new religion. It was the wisdom that was always there. And so that's basically what we see later on. But this is what is happening here. And they judge the people, verse 26, at all seasons. The hard causes that brought unto Moses. But every small matter, they judge themselves. And that's what Paul says to the congregation, to the brethren. What's the matter with you, he says in essence. And aren't you capable of judging, you know, those little things? You have to go to the courts of the land, to those who are least esteemed. You see, and that's what people do to this very day. Unfortunately, they've got problems against brethren, one another. They go to the courts of the land. And there were those in our midst that have been doing it for the past many years. And, you know, to our own shame. Because the law of God is not in our heart as it should be, and we do not fear God. And we're not obedient to the law of God, so we have to go to the unjust men of the world and seek their judgment. When God says, no, you live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, not the mouth of the world. And so these people, they did the judgment, and the small matters they did themselves, the big ones they gave to Moses. And Moses let his father-in-law depart, so his commission was finished. Obviously, it did mean that as soon as he spoke and used that, and he just threw him out, you know, you know, they still had some time. They spent together, they talked and discussed whatever, and the time went to go, and he went. After all, he had his own people to take care of. And Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into his own land. And so God is introducing this chapter here, 18th chapter of Exodus, and is basically dedicated to Jethro, a man that God used, a man who was chosen by God earlier to become the father-in-law of the lawgiver of Israel, Moses. You know, all those things were all from God from beginning until the end, with human input, obviously, in between. And chapter 19, and mind you, all this time they're still around Mount Sinai, they're already by the mountain there, because earlier when they were asking for water, this is where Moses gave it to them, from Mount Sinai, from Mount Horeb, as it was called, and from the rock. And so in the third month, we read here in chapter 19, and verse 1, after the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. And I sort of telling history that happened already, and they came to Mount Sinai. It's not that only at this moment they arrived, because earlier he already talked about Mount Sinai, or Mount Horeb. And verse 2, and when they were departed from Rephidim, which happened earlier before Jethro came, that's when they fought with Amalek, and were come to the wilderness of Sinai, and this is a place where Jethro came to visit them and see them when they already arrived at Mount Sinai, then camped in the wilderness, and there Israel encamped before the mount. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, thus shall you say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel. And this is a manner of writing that you see in the Bible, a two-way of saying the same thing, Jacob and Israel. And there are many, many statements like that, where God says it twice in different ways. That's poetic, you know, biblical poetry and culture. And that's the way they speak still to this very day when you study the Middle Eastern languages. Verse 4, and you have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagles' wings. You see? Now, obviously, he didn't send eagles to bring them out of Egypt, and then he put them on their wings. So, a lot of people, when they study the Bible, having no knowledge, no understanding, you know, they're just beginners, they read many things, and they don't know how to interpret them, because they come to this point, you know, on eagles' wings, and think, well, I begin to imagine, I guess, you know, God sent eagles to bring them out of Egypt. Well, you have to understand, the Bible is not written for the fool, it's written for the wise, to understand when what God says is literal and when it's not just a metaphor. You know, it's not literal, but a metaphor. And you have to understand it from that point of view. And so that's what God is saying here. I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. You see, I brought you directly from Egypt to myself. And that's the way he regarded his people. And what kind of people are we talking about? Righteous people? Kind people? Merciful people? You know, God-fearing people? Obviously not. They were the people of God, but they were a bunch of rabble-rousers, most of them, constantly trying God, constantly accusing God, constantly accusing Moses. You know, some people sometimes forget, you know, what does it mean to be people of God? Does not mean, you know, holy Jews. People of God does not mean servants of God, you know, all the way. It's that God chose them. Whether they behave as they should, that's a different matter. And so, you know, the Jews call themselves the chosen people, and they are the chosen people, and so are all the rest of the children of Israel, which don't regard themselves as the chosen people in the same sense anymore. And though they think now that we are Christians, we are the people of God, you Jews are not, so we are the chosen people, you see, and so forth. And the reality is, you know, there is a difference between the people of God and the people who obey God. These are two different matters. They can be contradictory, you know, one to the other, you see, and we have to understand that. And so when we talk about the people of God, you know, let's realize some among the people of God may be genuine and righteous, and the majority are not, and that's unfortunately the way it generally is. And it's only the few that find the road, the narrow road, and the majority go the broad way, and God speaks about the people of God, the chosen people, you see. And so a lot of people, you know, don't think that way, and they just have this concept in their mind, we're the people of God. So what does that mean? Do we obey God? Do we serve God? Do we live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God? And this is what God He's saying, here, I brought you unto myself. Yes, you are mine. I brought you to myself. Well, what kind of people are you? That's a different story. Verse 5. Now, therefore, if, you see, I brought you to myself. I'm your God. I've been with you all this time. Nobody else. But still, you've got a problem. And that's what he says here. If you will listen unto my voice, indeed. And you'll think, you know, well, now, what a pathetic statement to make to people of God. He does not even have to make a statement like that, ideally speaking. They should be, by nature, obedient to him. And yet you see how far they have gone from God while they are the people of God and while he brought them to himself, that he even has to make this statement, which is, you know, a tragic and sad statement, and he still does to this very day. You know, as Christ makes it very plain, as he speaks to his own people throughout all generations, to the last generation, to this very moment. He says, when I come to bash to my people, shall I find faith among you? You know, shall I find faith among my people that I brought to myself? And discusses all the problems that we have, and how he's going to have to spew some of the people of God out of his mouth, and the punishment, you know, that he's going to have to bring on his own people. And that's what he's saying here. If you will hearken unto my voice, speaking to his own people that he brought to himself, indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be mine own treasure from among all peoples. Which means that if you don't, you will not be. You see? So there's no such a thing as a general statement. Well, we are the people of God. Well, we are Christians. Well, we are the New Testament church. We are this and we are that. We are the chosen people. All that is absolutely meaningless. What really means, what really counts is, are we the people, not just the people of God, are we the people of God who really serve God from the heart? Do we fear him? Do we obey his voice? Do we seek his commandments? Do we hunger for him? Do we thirst for him? Do we eat his flesh and drink his blood? Are we so busy about, you know, browbeating each other and cursing each other or speaking evil against each other and exalting self and abasing others and saying, we are this and we are that and you are not? You see, we are all the people of God, but look what kind of people are we. And as Paul would say, you're all carnal people. Yes, you're the people of God, you're the people of Corinth, but you're all carnal. Look at the way you behave. That's what God is telling to his own people, his own family, the people that he brought to himself. His son Israel. You see? And as we study the law of God, you know, we begin to see that in a much deeper manner. It's meaningless just to be the people of God, or chosen people, or God called me unto himself, or God called me and gave me his Holy Spirit and so forth, and I'm, you know, a Christian, or I'm a follower of Christ, or a member of whatever. All that is totally meaningless. That's what God says that to them. If you will hearken unto my voice, indeed, you see, in truth, that is, not in deception and lies, not halfway, and keep my covenant, you see, which includes all the laws that he gave that were the conditions of this covenant, and that's what he means when he keeps the covenant, then you shall be mine. Otherwise, forget it. I'm going to throw you out, spew you out at the end of time. You know, I'll give you enough rope to hang yourself. That's what you want. Long leash. But we're going to have to come to the point of serving God with all of our being and heart, or else we'll be out. And so he says, if you will be, then you shall be mine, my own treasure from among all peoples. For all the earth is mine, and it shall be unto me a kingdom of priests. You see, but a priest has to be a person who is able, a person that fears God, obeys God, serves God, hates unjust gain and so forth, obedient to the law of God. And if we fall into that category, then we shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And some people, in their ignorance and blindness, especially the people that came to a little bit of the knowledge of the truth, you know, call themselves Christians. Christianity says, oh, well, that was the promise God made ancient Israel, but since they have rejected that, now we are the people of God. And so we read in the New Testament, now Peter says, now you are going to be a holy nation. In other words, forget about all the people of Israel. God, you know, totally forgot about them. Now you are the one. And in their confusion, you know, they don't realize that Peter is speaking to the children of Israel. The same people. God had never changed that reality. He's going to bring them back. As Paul said, all Israel shall be saved. Anyway, you know, when we study this kind of statements and later on read them, let's understand. An arrogant people, unfortunately, you know, people who pride themselves of being the people of God and have no knowledge, they don't understand that as they should. This statement will become a reality when the day comes and God brings back in Israel and makes a new covenant with them, and then there shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And so he says to Moses, "These are the words which you shall speak unto the children of Israel." Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.